G'day everyone and welcome to the show. And today's guests, we're doing a round table. I've got Bill and I've got Barry Littleton on the show. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us, Pete.
Yeah, thanks for coming back too, Bill. And it's awesome to talk to you again, Barry. I've talked to these two a couple of times now and always something interesting going on. Would it be nearly a year now that I've known you?
Yeah.
It's been a year.
Yeah. Yeah, we contacted you about a year ago.
Yeah, and recently, Bill, you were on the news in the States.
Right.
Would you like to just tell us a little bit about that? Because that was a good news piece.
Yeah, I got to be a guest presenter, and I figured out a way to take videos and still pictures by blocking the sun and of ships. And I've got a collection of that, and I've been able to show others how to do it. But I spoke twice now and have had good results with teaching other people how to do it. And they keep communicating with me and showing me their results, and it's the same things that I'm getting.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was on the newscast. They wired me up and recorded part of my presentation and allowed me time to talk about how I take the pictures and what I believe it is. And I think we can get into that a little bit. I think I'm being shown holographic or quantum holographic images. A lot of it, some of them I would say are really there in the atmosphere because there's evidence in my mind that they're making either vapor trails and things that are what do you term corporeal. They become three-dimensional, real in our space-time. So I've got photos of that too.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of your evidence. I find a lot of it fascinating. It's, I've had you on the show before. I put up a few of the pics. Mm-hmm. Now, actually, people can go to my my website and they will find, I'll put a link with this show to actually a past post I did with a heap of your photos that you sent me. And also, I've recently put up your clip that was the news covered of you over there. So I'll put that up just so people have got a bit more of a reference to go to.
Thank you.
No, that's fine. What I'll do, we'll go to Barry at the moment because I haven't had you on the show yet, Barry. And as I said to you before, between Carol and Sol, Mick, Lee, and a lot of others, you're highly respected and people love communicating with you over here.
Thanks, I appreciate that a lot. I thank everybody for that.
You're genuine. You're always a pleasure to communicate with, and you're very articulate, and I just love talking to you. It's fascinating. Would you mind giving us sort of just a snapshot of, like, we could talk for hours alone just with you, and I'm going to have you back on the show just you in the future. But would you mind just, because I've had Bill on, a lot of the listeners listen to almost everything, but could we just have a quick snapshot, overview, thumbnail sketch of yourself and just hit over that you're an experience and just a little overview if you can, please.
Oh, no problem. I started having experiences when I was very young, as far back as I can remember, starting with seeing my first ship with my mother when I was about five. And then certain playmates coming and things that didn't make sense, things like that. Due to the fact that most of my experiences were astral or dreamlike, I started asking, and telepathy, like many starseeds, I was born with that, but I started asking for a more corporeal, tangible evidence, something that I could prove to other people that something was really happening to me. Mm-hmm. And I tried everything to communicate with them. I didn't get any response for about maybe 15 years that I was aware of. And then they came back and we'll say transferred me physically when I was with somebody I was about to marry. That happened three times with her, equaling about 16 hours of missing time with her. And then by myself, I had missing time also that led me to get a few hypnotic regressions because I couldn't remember what happened despite my meditations and all that. That's kind of how you and I met when you posted that first regression. It caught me immediately. So.
Yeah.
And then it's persisted on till now, contacts. And there's been a lot of beings, and trying to put it into conform it to modern ufology was really hard. And it kind of gets some of us a little stressed. So.
It's not so compartmentalized like a lot of people would like to think with the nuts and bolts component too, because if they want nuts and bolts it's not really nuts and bolts. It's because it's we're dealing with other forms of physics, higher forms of physics that's more intelligence, in, whether it's technology or even, you know, spiritual-wise, which doesn't go into that compartment. It's totally different. Yeah. What's funny, too, is that you two have been on the crafts together, and when we first started talking, you were telling me how... and I've told a few people this, and it's funny how you'd be taken and you'd be put on a craft, and you would know the beings and you don't know how you'd know them, and they're telling you, like, you'd be basically the mechanic working on the propulsion system or doing something, fixing whatever. So, and you'd do it and you don't know how you did it, but you'd know what you're doing. And just talking to Bill in the past too with the cube, how you've walked in it and you're in...
Yep.
The space, it's a thing that comes up with you too, talking to you, is about the propulsion system, the technology. You both remember a lot about inside the crafts, just with the ramps and seeing the beings and a lot of stuff that, you know, a lot of experiences usually just have sort of snippets and flashes. And yes, we get that as well, but there's some more stuff that you guys remember more than most. Would you mind... get Barry to go first. Would you mind going into some of just sort of the trippy stuff like that that's happened on the crafts pertaining to propulsion?
Would you? Okay, the one that I can really go into was the one where I actually saw Bill. And I was on the bottom, and oftentimes I've seen people touring the ships, and they seem to be in astral form. They're a little transparent. But I seem to go there physically quite a bit. And I have a problem with temporal aphasia, the distortment. I get sick there quite a bit. It's like being on a merry-go-round. I never understood why I didn't like those, but it's the same type of a feeling. The specific ship that I saw Bill on, as well as Susan, I saw her on there.
Susan
as well.
Kornacki, who I've also had on the show.
I'm a big fan of hers. Yeah, I recognized her immediately when she posted something on Facebook, but never have actually met her, if you know what I mean, but I've seen her on a ship. Anyway, this one had I was down at the propulsion, which is the bottom level of this, all right? And the only way I can describe it is a gyrosphere, okay? It's the rings are moving around it,
right.
But the sphere itself appears to be not liquid mercury, but something similar to that. It's light.
So okay? That's containing whatever is happening within it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, at least, or perhaps it was a power source itself, and the rings around it were gyroscopically harnessing it. But just outside of that was a large white light, and the beings described it to me. They called it the living light. Okay, and this light goes up. It goes up so far that this is bigger than a skyscraper. Okay, but about two levels up, I can see some people up there. Okay, and one of them would be Bill. And he is touching the living light. And I can hear them telepathically telling, you can touch the living light. It can heal people. I've been on another ship where they told me the sound and the vibration of the ship, the engine itself, can heal human flesh. Not just astral energy, but the human flesh also.
Were you able to hear that sound?
Yes.
Is it very similar to a Tibetan singing bowl, but different?
Yeah, maybe a little deeper on the bass, but quite similar. Yes,
so there's the low and there's the high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of gets you in your bottom spine there.
During that, I only felt like vibration. I didn't hear sounds other than the telepathic thought.
Yeah.
Everything I saw was more visual, or I could feel the touch. Physically, I could feel things. If I touched it, it had substance to it, or it had even warmth. I could even tell the thermal temperature. Like when I touched the light, it actually felt like I was touching a down pillow, but it had a temperature that was maybe about 100 degrees. It was just slightly warmer than the human touch.
Yep.
Question. Now, you and some of my other experiences and friends that have seen the living light, when you touched it, did it kind of transform you in a wormhole type of
yes.
way?
Yes. Oh, immediately. At first, I didn't believe it, and I looked down because the railing around that was containing a containment around this, like to keep you from walking into it. Literally, I looked down at it, and then everything just condensed around where I focused.
Now, did everything go to is that the time when everything eventually went to like black, like space?
Yes. I immediately, within probably 3 to 4 seconds, I was standing in space. It looked like the keys on a piano keyboard, the black and white alternating, and all of a sudden everything just went to the right and just fanned, closed, and it turned black to a point. And then all of a sudden I'm standing in the middle of space. I could see stars, planets, and I'm just standing there. And then all of a sudden I started moving like in a through a column of something appeared. And then it started going faster to where everything kind of became a blur. And then I noticed that this star being was on my right side behind me. I could feel the presence. I knew it was there. Telepathically, I knew it was there. I couldn't see it because everything was going by so fast. But then that's when I started to have fear and wondering to know, where am I going?
Yeah. You know, I believe he's describing the Akashic Records in a way that's not the way Edgar Cayce described them, but the instantaneous, like, you felt like you kind of might know everything at once?
Yeah. I've had that too.
Like, you became one with creation when I stepped out. It was like being in the over the Grand Canyon and just standing there, but you're in space. I mean, it's like you just walked off the edge of a building is what it felt like.
You know, as far as the construction of the ship itself, Pete, I'm always looking for a frame of reference. Yep. I like science fiction, but to me, like Star Trek First Contact, Star Trek Insurrection, the movies, if you've seen the engine room there, it's slightly different in how the light pulses up, but more how the deck plates are.
I've only started watching Star Trek, and I don't mind it. I used to be like, heads, and I started watching, I'm like, this isn't too bad. I don't mind that Captain Janeway in that one either.
It looks like the warp engines, the warp core with the light, but it didn't have any pulsating light. It was a constant column of light. Like my photographs I have will show a column of light ascending above the ships.
Yeah.
And sometimes now I'm even getting them to where they go two directions, not just up, or what we would say was up, but it's actually being emitted from two directions, the top and the bottom.
Now, I think I've said this to you before. I might have even said on the last show, do you think when you're in that, wherever that black space was where you could see everything, do you think that this propulsion system device was drawing energy from the fabric of space to power this? Or is that you think? Yeah, yeah.
To that environment somehow, because it was like stepping in through a wormhole.
Yeah.
I mean, I basically stepped into a wormhole.
Mm-hmm. Trippy. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, Barry, what's your experience with this device as well? So you think that, the same as myself, that this device is drawing the power from the fabric of space somehow?
Yes. Well, I can tell you what they told me.
Yep.
They had told me that there's a special alliance with certain planets, and I take it that they're non-populated, that are metallurgical. They pull minerals from them, and the metals, these planets are devoid of Van Allen belts and partially atmosphere. So they're getting just bombarded by cosmic rays, and the metals there are much more durable. And then what I know is that they said that they're grown, the ships are grown in deep space. So they're actually grown around a singularity. So therefore, the singularity itself is actually the engine, and the physical parts are just harnessing it.
Yeah.
You know, the other ship I was on, this isn't the one I saw Bill on, but I seemed to be suddenly on a very large ship, a very large room, okay? And there are three that I would definitely call now quasi-crystals, okay? But we can't grow quasi-crystals. These things are about, I'd say, 9 feet tall, about maybe 2 feet wide. Three of them. They're wrapped with something that looks similar to copper, and each one of them is in an individual tube, and all three of them are in a tube, okay? And they're machines on top and bottom, different. And they start spinning. And like all the crystals I've seen, like the Merkaba, the other ship turned into, they all have some type of a bioluminescence or chemical luminescence that comes out from the inside. And I'm sorry, man, but our crystals here on Earth don't do that.
See, I'm finding this absolutely fascinating because I've been on similar crafts, but what I don't get, what you guys get, is different stuff. And the crafts that I do remember a lot, and they're created by consciousness like we've talked about before. So this is why I'm finding this, if I'm grinning, it's not like I'm thinking you're nuts. I'm loving this because this is information and stuff that I haven't been able to talk to anyone but you two about going into this much depth. So Sorry for butting in, but keep going on, man. Keep going on, because this is fascinating.
Well, I'll tell you what. When they actually start spinning, they produce that hum, but it's even louder than the ship I saw Bill on. Okay,
and it was a similar
and my
hum.
Friend, my insectoid friend, is floating above the plates over there, and he telepathically tells me, "This doesn't just power our mother ships; this can also power planets." And then he said, "Biosatellites." I had to look that one up. That's beyond a mothership. I think some of the ones we're seeing on the SOHO that are blocking some of the solar flares.
Really?
I think that's what he's referring to, yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't know how big this thing was, but the engine itself was huge.
So they're alive because they're bio. They're alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, absolutely. And he told me, he said, a lot of experiencers are brought here to see this engine and feel it, not just because it will heal the astral body, but it will also heal physical flesh. And that's and then after that, kind of black out sometimes.
And that also had a similar hum to the other craft, the sound.
Yeah, just a little louder, a little more deep. I mean, I could feel it from like in my root chakra. Yeah, That's those are the two engines I've seen anyway that I could really describe. There's other technology like hybrid maturation chambers. I've seen that and things like that, but none of it seems to conform to what other experiencers are seeing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is what we've talked about, that a lot of the stuff you and me had experienced, it wasn't sort of a common thing, you know. A lot of people go into the greys and whatnot, and that's why you and me hit it off on top of other things, was because it wasn't your – and the same with Bill. It wasn't just your average, you know, little greys and, you know, the same thing over and over. Would you mind describing and letting the viewers and listeners know a little bit about the types of beings or what they look like? If just whatever information you could sort of tell us, just to give us an idea of what you've seen.
Sure, I've seen a few different. You know, not all the beings have given me names like I so often hear, like Arcturians or whatever. They'll say odd things sometimes, like we're from Sector 47 beyond nanospace. Well, you know, what does that mean? I had to go look that up. They very rarely give a sector or light years. They don't really do that. You know what I mean? But I have seen a few different beings, okay, that I can consciously remember. One of them would be, their names we would know, Plejarians, okay? And they told me they weren't Pleiadians. They were Plejarians. They were pure blue energy, light beings.
Now, absolutely. That's similar to Shady.
Yeah. And they were a lot of love coming off them, a lot of love, okay? Another one I experienced were, they said they were from the Andromeda Council, but mm-hmm. not quite, because they're on the spiral that's kind of out there on the edge.
On the arm,
arm spiral, yeah. They were blue beings. They were very small. And they now that I look at them, Pete, to be honest, and I look at the bed they had me on, they said they were giving me, they weren't taking my sperm or anything like that, forgive me. They were calling it a frequency reconfiguration. And it seemed like they were photocopying my DNA. So I asked them, are you photocopying me? But they say, no, it's more of an upgrade of consciousness.
I've had experiences with little blue dudes from Andromeda, which is...
Now, question, were they like 2 feet tall? I mean, these guys are little.
I can't say, but they were small. And they were a little bit chubby.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, they even had on blue outfits that were, they looked kind of like racing outfits with a lighter blue stripe on them, like a racing stripe, and they were using their hands to telepathically interface with the ship. And they were leaving to me that it was more like fiber optics of some type, advanced fiber optics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just we don't quite understand it yet, I don't think. That was one. Those are two names. The other one that came through is the being himself. He calls himself Mana, M-A-N-N-A. But he is not like anything. His race is not like any that I've seen any experiencers talk about yet. But you said you had. He's about 8 feet tall, beige. But the main thing to notice in them, their brain appears to be on the outside. Their brain, the way our brain looks, theirs looks like it's on the outside. And his eyes are black and larger.
Yeah.
And he sent me, when I said, well, where are you from? You know, he sent me information, a telethought, that was from Star Wars, Dr. Akbar, which is one of the rebellion leaders that kind of looks like he's some type of an amphibian. And he said, if you can find out more about his race, you'll understand mine more.
And I've seen you posting that lately where you have been talking on Facebook about these amphibian...
Really?
You know, and this is where I've sort of just looked at it and gone, I haven't seen it, but something totally resonates to me, to me about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, the other one would be, since a child, he's the first one that really came forward to me, Xandar, and he's insectoid, but not like any mantids or anything I'd seen like that. And I find that a little disturbing at first because I've heard different things about the mantids. He's definitely ancient, but he looked much more like a grasshopper or a true locust, a cross between those. And he was very much like that, but his limbs were proportioned a lot like ours. Yeah. He didn't have large antennae. He had little nubs here. But that would be another one. He's been around a lot with me, and I think he kind of protects me and helps me when I couldn't accept my experiences quite. So those would be the major ones I've seen, and then the other one I just spoke to you of, the throne beings.
Yeah. Well, we'll go into that in a second. What I'll do just quickly, we'll go to Bill, and just so for those who don't know much about yourself, do you want to just give yourself just a quick overview of yourself, because you've been on the show before, but also the types of things you've interacted with too?
Yeah, what I've been doing, I've been shown and interacted with what I call tall white robed beings, and they emit light. In fact, a lot of the light around you when you're being shown around a ship, it's emitting from them. Everything else, it's like your memory, it's like black and white. I don't know how to describe it any other way. Everything's in black and white. There's really not much color other than a few pieces of metal or something like that that look like brushed stainless steel to me. But my experiences started out in a dream state where I was like told I was going to see UFOs, and I started laughing back to the being, and I said, well, this is an interesting dream, because I thought I was just strictly dreaming, but it quickly turned into like telepathic thought. And then that's when I was shown the UFOs. Within 24 hours, I was already seeing these in the sky, and they started appearing, and it happened over a couple of months. And I eventually got some on film, and then that led to another observation. I would see whole battles take place in the sky, what appeared as battles between large orbs and small orbs, physically fighting each other. I couldn't believe this, and I've got that. I've seen that. And then that progressed to the ability to figure out how to take photographs by blocking the sun. And I found out other people had been able to had found out about that in the late 90s, 1996 actually. A gentleman in California was out there, and he saw these things all his life. And one day he got the big VHS out recorder and started recording, and he started seeing things. And recording them. So out of that, I've just developed a technique, and over time, I've had more dreams, more visions, and I've been shown around on ships at least once. I know I've been on there three times, actually. And I've also had, out of that, I've had in my early years, I had a near-death experience when I was much younger, 19 years of age. So since then, I was always aware that there's something beyond this life. So maybe that played into it. I was much more aware of things. I had premonitions in my personal life. I couldn't forecast for somebody else, but I always knew a gut feeling or had a vision or a dream or something. As I would go through life at different points, I was kind of led in a direction and which way to go. So out of all this, it kind of amazed me at first, and I said, no, I'm just playing into that. But then I started getting the photographs, and after meeting other people like Barry, I said, well, I'm not the only person. I've met you, obviously. I'd seen you on your YouTube channel. And all of the things that I had met Mary, I had talked to her.
Mary Rodwell?
Rodwell, yes. So coming out of that, I knew that I wasn't the only person, and I've also had other people experience and see the same things that I've seen, standing there with me. So I knew I wasn't the only one having that moment and that experience. So that was kind of comforting, because at first I thought I was the only one having this. Now, I will tell you this, some of the people in my life that have been there, they've been blocked from seeing this. They've actually seen orbs, like golden orbs, come down about over my head in height, and I'm about 6 foot tall. So they've even been blocked from seeing these on several occasions. And yet I got the video while they were having all that. I was videotaping. So there is kind of a moment then that changed things a little bit to where I realized that not everybody's going to see this right now because they weren't meant to, maybe. I don't know. I can't answer
that
for sure.
That same stuff has happened with myself where I'll see right. it and others won't, and you still get it right. on video.
Yeah, it's all there. And then I've had the doubting people in my recent presentations after I have the time to speak with individuals afterward that come forward, and they're the doubters of the world. I mean, they always have a technical idea, well, no, it's this or it's this, and then they go out and I show them with the camera, and then a week later they're sending me their own videos. So they become awakened. That's my presentation is called Awakening.
Now you go to go on, mate.
I was just going to say, like, you know, his technique works, and it's pretty impressive.
Well, I was just about to bring it up that it's pretty trippy. It's using Polaroid lens, wearing the glasses, plus getting a lens and putting it over the lens of the camera, and then being on an angle where having a structure in front of you, block, like you try to get the sun under it, so the sun's hitting the roofs here, and you will see, like, you've got some stuff like Darn Merkabas, and...
Yes.
Ships with windows, and you're getting a heap of them at a time. Like, you can basically go and do it any time, and it's there. I've done it myself and seen it that way, and other people have been like, what? And I've taken them out where I last was and, you know, showed them, and they're sort of like, you know, that's pretty trippy. So, you know, it does work. Now, you go into the hologram side of things of how some of these are a hologram projection. We were talking about this before the show started, and this is something I wanted to go into. Like, I would like to go into the crystal type ships that both of you were talking about, plus this holographic aspect. Would you mind giving the viewers and the listeners an idea of what you mean by that? Because I do agree with you on this aspect, totally. Not all, but some of them are.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'd say, from what I've come to believe myself and how the camera works, I believe that these look like projections because there's nothing that they can pass in front of the light and be ahead of it like the sun, but at the same time, they can be even in front of the shaded area. They've even projected in front of the shaded area. You'll see little ships. I've had many occasions where that has happened, which has led me to believe they're not lens flares because they'll actually change shape slightly.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got some essence to them, but it's like a reflection of whatever is beyond. So I've talked to Dr. Rudy Shield, astrophysicist, and he believes, and I'm beginning to believe, that they are actually holographic in nature, and they can even... be affected by your thought. Whatever you're thinking, they'll come forward or they'll go back. And I've had other photos and videos I've taken where you'll get multiple things happening all at once. You'll have some that look like they're trying to distract you, and then others are just sitting there, and then they'll morph or change into what we call the Merkaba, where it's just a body of light. It looks like a star tetrahedron of light.
And you'll be able to see some crafts go at each other, haven't you? Sort of like a war in the skies.
Yes, I've actually, when I first started having the appearances, I actually, looking through binoculars, now I think these were really here in our third dimension, and they were really here because I could see them with my binoculars, and they were coming out of ships, just orbs everywhere, I mean, thousands of them. And there were two sizes. One was large and one was small. The larger ones were probably outnumbered 3-1. And the small ones were not having a good day. And then later, the small ones were picked up. There was a device that was dropped from a ship. I've got photos of this thing tumbling down out of the sky because it looked like a bright star, kind of an orange star in the middle of the afternoon, bright, clear day. And then from that, I followed it and got it into the camera as it tumbled down, and then it stopped. A part of it came off, And this little machine went around with a tunnel or a probe sticking out of it and went around picking up all the little orbs while the larger orbs sat there and levitated near it and followed it around like it was watching or being on guard or something. And then the whole sky just disappeared after that. All of this, everything cleared away within probably 10 minutes. He had the whole sky cleaned up and then everything disappeared. And vanished. It was quite interesting that day. I've got a lot of that on tape.
That's fascinating. What's some of the other type of stuff you've got like as well? Has it all been like that, or like you've obviously seen more physical type?
Right.
Yeah.
I've actually presented this. I've actually had some project what looks like a commercial aircraft above it. And there's like a whole group of them moving in unison, and they go just a little faster than a commercial airliner tracks, because I just know because they fly over our house where I'm at, and I'm looking through the binoculars and it doesn't quite look right, and so I zoom in. I'm wearing my sunglasses, polarized sunglasses, and sure enough, hanging there is two or three other ships. So I get the camera out and I started taking stills, and I got them in sequence. And above it looks like a faint holographic image of whatever commercial aircraft. You know, it looks even like the airline that you're familiar with, but it's not clear. Yeah. It just isn't clear. The camera won't make it clear. But when you go to zoom, it focuses, and there's complete ships, and they're making contrails. So you know that something's there in the atmosphere. I've even experimented a little bit after I figured out that you can – and use visual thought, and I prepared myself, and I actually went out one afternoon and followed an orb around and closed my eyes, and I thought, I hate to say this, but I had negative thoughts, thinking that things were out of control, and visualizing like I was in the ship or looking from the ground or from the, down back at the ground, and this thing, I look up, and it's completely going out of control. And I happen to have my camera, and somehow I got on it, and I've taken 10 stills in sequence, and there actually is what looks like this thing breaking apart, and there's another ship coming to its aid in the stills. You can see it. It comes in very close, and after that, everything broke up, and then everything disappeared. Nice. So there is some interaction over time I've seen where they've actually made contrails. Because that's the only other evidence that I've noted.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything drop out of the sky. Nothing's landed in my backyard or anything like that.
No, there's people here in Australia getting very similar stuff, and they have got a contrail, and it's just not normal stuff. So
they're ships, and I've got hundreds of photos of this, and I think it was a way for them to get my attention, because it was like that in the beginning,
yeah.
And it was a way to get my attention because I wasn't falling for it. My experiences hadn't developed enough to where I wasn't comfortable with what I was seeing yet.
Yeah.
And I think it was a way for them to allow me to be comfortable and keep going out looking.
Yeah. Well, Barry, what's some of the stuff you've seen that's like that pertaining to what types of crafts we're seeing? Like before the show, we were talking about some of the crystal type crafts and the Pleiadian ones with the antennas and that type of thing. Would you mind just going into that a little bit for us?
Oh, sure. One of my first physical experience where I was actually taken or transferred, when I first noticed the ship, it pulsed in, as they often do, they materialize, but it appears to be what I would describe as a classic Pleiadian ship with a very large directional emitter on top of it. It's turning like a light, and each time it turns my direction, it sounds like it's tuning me in, kind of like a radio station, a woo, 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 very deep, and it's unmistakable, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, towards the end of the experience, okay, another ship showed up, but it appears to be a golden spear, okay, and the person I was with was kind of entranced with this one, in telepathy with this one. I'm still watching the Pleiadian ship, what I thought that's what it was anyway. It starts flashing, and then it starts morphing, all right? Mm-hmm. It morphs into something I would call quasi-crystals, is what our science calls it now. But if I was going to try to describe it to someone, I would say the first Superman movie, with Marlon Brando and Christopher Reeve, but when he actually sends Superman here to Earth, the ship he sends him in is made of crystals, and it's a ball with little stalagmites coming off of it. Each ball looked quite a bit like that, okay, with a rod and then another one. So it looked similar to a molecule in like a pyramid form, but it was moving like that. But each of these balls emitted a certain light, like blue, gold, red. I see them like that, and it's pulsing a lot, and it's shooting out light. You can see that, okay? The problem was I had no frame of reference to understand that with. I mean, that's nothing I'd seen before. I had to go to things that were biblical, like Ezekiel and things like that, to someone that could describe these crystals they'd seen like that. That'd be the one I think you're talking about. Yeah. It was it was pretty interesting. Merkaba is as close as I could get, but that isn't even quite right. Yeah. A little bit more than that. Maybe a Merkaba for a Ascended Master. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I've seen a ship. It was the third ship I saw where I actually used my binoculars, like in the very beginning before I even had a camera to use. And it looked like if you took a drop of molten material, really bright, stainless looking, and then turned the drop up this way where the rounded edge was on top, and then it all just oozed like this to a pinnacle.
Yep.
That was the third ship I saw using my binoculars that didn't look like it was constructed by human beings. I mean, I saw it with my sunglasses, with my six-power binoculars, and it appeared like a star. If you just saw it in the light with the sunglasses on, it looked like a bright orange kind of red twinkly star in the middle of the afternoon, which doesn't happen. I mean, you just don't see that. But that's what it looked like as it materialized. Then it stayed there for 15 minutes over my house. Then as I went back out to get something in the house and went back out, and it was still there. And I was looking at it, and then all of a sudden it flashed bright white, got big like a ball of white light, and then just shot right over my house. Now that got my attention, but it started out as this molten look. But it didn't. It just had a really nice essence around it, kind of an orange essence.
I had mentioned to you earlier that they had told me that a lot of the metal from that these ships are made from are mined from planets that are lacking Van Allen belts and radiation belts in some atmosphere. So these minerals are bombarded by solar activity constantly. You know, cosmic rays actually. But then they take them and they build them in deep space.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, that kind of conforms to that, I think, a little what you're saying.
So even if some of them may be the main, like, same elements of what we've got here on Earth, they're built, when you look at the isotope structure of how these are constructed, they would be different if some of them are the same elements of what we've got here. But then you'd probably have elements like 130 or 140 something that we don't have here that we know of.
Yeah. Well, you know, even here now, things like here, the president's limo, the window itself, they actually bond the glass in space right now, or in zero gravity.
Really?
So therefore, the bond, it's so much stronger. The glass is so much stronger than it would be if it was done just naturally here.
Yeah.
And I think if you take that extra mineral and have it that much more resistant and do it in space, it's going to be capable of interstellar travel, you know.
Yeah.
But I know this much too, the composite that they make that you've described before,
mm-hmm.
When they actually activate the skin of the ship, it's like a dimensional, and they do a frequency jump. And actually for us, it looks like it's going like the Enterprise or the Millennium Falcon, it's going into warp speed.
Yeah.
When
mm-hmm.
reality is just a frequency shift that creates a great glow, a
mm-hmm.
bright glow. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean the ship isn't still there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's maybe
mm-hmm.
you're seeing some of that holographic like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a
yeah.
proposal.
Now, well, it is, you know, there's so many parts to it. With the how they travel and that, do you think a lot of the time they are using wormholes and then they're actually flying at, you know, some type of warp speed and then they've got to go somewhere else, bang, they'll make a wormhole or use a natural wormhole? And
I think it's like sometimes anything from micro to natural wormhole. But I think they're using to actually traverse it. I think they're using gravitational waves.
Yeah. Yep.
I think they're using gravitational waves, which can be almost instant to get through the wormhole itself.
So they'll propagate very similar to how a microwave would, which is very reminiscent of what Bob Lazar was trying to say. Everyone was saying he's full of crap back in the day, but then we don't know what gravity is or how it propagates probably at the moment, but we do later in the late 90s, 2000s, we're saying it's a gravitational wave now. So
it's like a surfer on a surfboard riding a wave. That's exactly what it looks like. I've got the videos that show them this happening. You can see the interaction with the atmosphere when this happens. The ones that are actually here in the atmosphere.
So basically they've created their own field and they're within that field and they're basically anything outside of that field they're immune to because it's not within their field.
Exactly.
Well, you know, some of the beings themselves said some things to me that are very odd. So we could come to Earth without ships, but we use the ships because to get out of them, the density there is very painful, and we can get trapped. These are light beings telling me that they feel like they're burning by the time they get here.
Yeah.
And I didn't even understand what the heck that meant, man. You know, how is a light being gonna burn? But it's such a different physics than what we're used to that. Yeah.
Well, people have said the same to me. They said, why would they even, if they're light beings, why would they even need a craft? And I didn't bother responding because they're thinking like that. You've got to be open-minded if you want to investigate this field or talk to people like us. And it's like Shiji and basically other beings have said exactly what you've said to me. It's like they need that to protect them from vibrations outside of theirs because where they're at, it's like us jumping into a bloody... above a volcano, it's so hot, we're going to melt and not exist. So it's they're coming into a different field. They need something to protect them.
Mm-hmm. You know, can I add something real quick?
Yeah, mate.
You know, a lot of times I had a problem on the first ships I was on because the crew members were out of my mortal vision. You know, I could feel them. I can hear them in my thoughts, but I couldn't always see them. But on this first one, this ship is full of these... I would call them large eggs. They're like these, made of some sort of a, looks similar to glass. Inside of the glass appears to be like a mist, okay? And also there's light moving around in there. And some of the lights will come to the edge, and I see the crew members I can focus on in there. They're around these tubes. Okay, I'm mesmerized by it. And it never occurred to me until I got so dizzy, I was about to throw up, and one of the guys told me, you're not paying attention. It's not that. I'm getting sick. Don't you understand? And two of these lights come out of one of these glasses. One attaches here, one to my lower rib, and I automatically start saying they're changing my time field. They're making it so I'm not getting sick. So I didn't realize that inside of these tubes are actually the leaders, the command officers, whatever you'd like to call them. They're hired, Eileen maybe, and things like that. And I think maybe the mist itself was alive also. But I couldn't put that together. I mean, I'm on a ship. It's a physical creation. I'm like, where's Spock? Where's Sulu? Where's something I can understand? But it's not like that.
Nah. Well, I'm in Melbourne now, as you know, I'm with Sol. And that's the first time I've said anything like that on a show. But where I was in with Giles and some stuff happened up there. Me and Giles, just so everyone know who I was in with, Giles and Britt, nothing's wrong with us. We love each other. Everything's sweet. There was some stuff where I was being investigated by the government about what I was doing there in terms of what we think with the ET contact stuff. But in saying that, on that property, I had high strangeness at home. You know, it's been in my books for the last couple of years with the stuff that I've got. But the mist, why I'm bringing this up is the mist. Now, on that property, we called it the meeting place because as soon as I got to that property when I first visited, before I even considered moving there, I had an experience with an Aboriginal elder spirit. And the Aboriginal term, the meeting place, kept on popping up, which is like four circles. It gets bigger. So one, two, three, four, and then four lines like that. And it's the Aboriginal symbol for meeting place. And also tall, thin rocks where you'd see them here in Australia. Naturally, the tribes would say that's where we would meet. And this Aboriginal elder was trying to tell me, and over time was telling me that the area, Agnes Water, which is one of the, you could say, acupuncture points or portal spots, which connects up with Ayers Rock in the guts of Australia, and with other places like Stonehenge and that, the interdimensional meeting places. And there was Metatron that would overlook that area too, and there'd also be the Guardians, which was funny that you brought up Metatron before we started the show. But being in that place, what would happen is it would happen hundreds of times a day. This bloody mist, it would be, or I'd telepathically be communicating with it. The mist would be alive, and it would be a different variety of beings when I would see it, mm-hmm. from nature stuff to Aboriginal spirits to interdimensional beings. But they wouldn't fully materialise, but you would see them. Sometimes, like, I was sitting there in the house, and you would see just these whitish mist. Great. Like, Giles would see it sometimes walk for the table like it was a tall humanoid type grey, but with the black Arnhem eyes, and it would just walk through the table, and he's like, what the hell? I would see them fully physical appear on, and we're on 44 acres, so it's wilderness, and you've got snakes and lizards like a metre and a half long walking along, and then you've got this wispy stuff going by, and the crafts would be like that too, which I would call transparent crafts. They would have a defined shape to them. So I thought I'd bring that up. I've sort of hit a few things there for the people that follow me and that, so they know why I'm where I am and I'm not up there and that. But also, it with you saying the mist, I think there is a possibility that that mist that you were seeing was some type of intelligence. Maybe it wasn't fully manifested into what you could physically see or perceive in astral form even. But there's something to that, because now I'm seeing this stuff everywhere.
Yeah, it's more than just atmosphere. And, you know, it takes me back to something like Shakespeare and them talked about a lot. They talked about the time of the mist on Earth. Have you ever heard that? And supposedly before the Cretaceous period.
No,
things weren't as crystallized. Things weren't as crystallized as they are now.
I think Credo Mutwa might have touched on this. Credo Mutwa. It might have touched on this before. He was saying before, I don't know, he was going right back to a time when there was sort of everything was misty. It's the only thing I've heard. So, sorry for interrupting. That's probably the only thing I've heard about that. So, yeah.
Yeah. It was just hard to accept at first because just, I can't speak for everyone, but the ships I've been on, it's very hard to breathe in some of them. And to the point that they took me to a room that I realize now was a lot like a hyperbaric chamber before they sent me back.
Yeah.
I mean, just trying, and I think that there's also a certain element there that some of the star beings can breathe that we kind of can, but it's not quite as malleable for us, and it does something to us. I mean, I've been sick on a lot of those ships, and I mean, everything, the G-forces are pulling me down. And at the same time, it's like being on a merry-go-round. Yeah. And they kept saying the temporal distortment leads to temporal aphasia. I had to look that up.
In saying that, a lot of experiences I've talked to have had something similar with what you're describing. Even I don't know him personally, but Travis Walton talks about how when he was on the board the craft and that there was these Nordic-type beings, and I think he did see little greys originally on the craft. I can't remember, but I think there was little types of greys there, but he said that he had trouble breathing, that he really had to try and breathe, whether it was thicker or thinner, I'm not sure how it works. So it is a common thing, and I've had a similar thing with it as well. So very much so, that's what, you know, does happen on some of them.
I could say this too, in the maturation chamber, the one I was in, it was even harder to breathe in there. And the mother of the hybrids was in there, but she was telepathy. Her telepathy was so strong that, I mean, it's like I was smashing against her eye. At the same time, I can't breathe. I'm getting dizzy. So they're asking me to fix equipment on there. It's just thousands of years more advanced than anything I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, things like that. And it didn't make sense at first, you know.
And that was, even though the technology is so far advanced, was this one of the ones that they were saying that you've helped create?
She told me it was old. It was very old, and I helped make it, and I had to fix it. I said, are you kidding me? And I'm getting about to throw up anyway, so I can't help much anybody.
Jeez.
She kept saying, you know, I didn't understand what it was at first, Peter. She kept saying that this could hurt someone. Hurt someone? And I couldn't understand, because actually the compartment itself, it looked a lot like Star Trek The Next Generation, where Worf stands, and the Tasha Yardu, how it goes around the bridge like that. It's like a tape with metal on it. It looked quite a bit like that. I mean, to the point that I was hitting the top of it to try to pop it up and see what was inside of it. It was very interesting, you know, but it was technology that we couldn't produce for at least 1,000 years, yeah. Peter.
Well, I just want to touch on this too, because Bill, you brought it up about your near-death experience, but Barry, if you don't mind me going into it, you were in a bit of an accident some time ago too, and you know, looking at how that happened, we sort of might not have had you here. I don't know, you know, with how bad it was.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Would you mind just touching on to that? And do you think that's had any effect, or that upstairs has played any part in how you've recovered, or you're still here with us?
Definitely. For all my great intelligence, I wasn't wearing my seatbelt, had a nice little Trans Am, and I got hit and went through every window in there, including my T-tops. So when the paramedics got there, I was laying on the other side of the car, dying through the door, kind of. They resuscitated me, brought me back, but I took 4 brain injuries, catastrophic traumatic ones. So it took about, I was in a coma for about a little over 2 weeks, and it took about a month and a half to remember who I was. So like on TV, when they come out of the coma and they're like, what happened? No. But as far as they said, I would most likely be a vegetable with no memories of my life. Bill knows my father, mm-hmm. you know how distressing that was. Mm-hmm. I had a near-death experience during the time. Okay. Chronologically, it happened right after the accident. So when I woke up, I could still see these angels. I would definitely call them angels, because they're not like the star beings or any of the inorganic beings I've dealt with from Earth. These are higher angels, okay? I saw several of them, and we also had buried my uncle just 2 days before the accident. I saw him and my grandmother also, and they told me I was very injured and I could cross over and things like that. I believe that the angels channeled enough pure God consciousness down to me to help me survive. The prayers of the hundreds of people that came up and saw me and heard about it, I'm convinced that that kept me kind of the way I am now. As far as a lot of people say, I see you, you don't seem any different. I'm a little emotionally stressed out. Yeah. But as far as cognitive-wise, I'm all right. And I think that's been definitely a blessing. And there's a lot of God, Christ consciousness energy in that. And I say that non-religious, but it's a fact.
No, I appreciate that you're here and I've been able to communicate and be friends with you in this plane while we're here. Obviously, we know each other from upstairs like we've talked about. We just know each other and we don't know how, but that's how the thing goes. Now, with you, Bill, like, that's obviously been a big part for you, your near-death experience too, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I didn't have, as I said, I was young when it happened, and I didn't quite know what was going on at the time. I'd gotten stung by bumblebees, so I was having an allergic reaction, and I couldn't breathe, and they transported me to a small hospital. I was in a lot of pain, and all of a sudden, I'm not in any pain, and I'm starting to step out of my body. And then all of a sudden, a great force, actually, there was a will in me that says, I'm not ready to, you know, this can't be happening. So my will to live overtook it, and then about that time, a force, physical force, just pushed back onto my body. I remember like an arm or a hand, it'd be like somebody putting their hand on you and push who I am back into my physical body. Then all the pain came back. Everything came back. I remember then I came to in the emergency room and the doctors and nurses standing there, of course, and they were, I could hear the talking and everything. Because that's another thing. I didn't hear any more talking. People weren't talking. I didn't hear anything. I just heard silence. Mm. I don't know if that was your experience, but I had nothing. There was no sound, no pain, and it's like you're in this in-between zone. And I got pushed back in, and then over a month, it took me to. I kept playing back in my mind what just happened to me, and it was about a month later that I started having premonitions. I would have dreams or vivid dreams about something I was supposed to go do or whatever, or showed me the answer. Things would always pop up that would show me the answers. I was in college then studying, so it might be related to my studies. And somebody, you know, I would already know the answer before I ever opened the book. Yeah. And that didn't make any sense to me. And then people thought I was a you know, I kind of had to be careful because some people kind of got offended by it a little bit. And I tell them, well, this is going to happen. And they said, you're full of it. And sure enough, it would happen to me, you know. A day later or a week later, it all happened. And it helped me through my work life because I engineer things. And I would overhear conversations in other groups that are engineers that couldn't figure out an area of design or something they were having a problem with. And I'd overhear it. And the next morning, I'm driving to work, I'd have the whole vision of what the answer was. And to go explain that to people that, you know, they take pride in what they do, but I'd go to the management and I'd say, well, why don't you try doing this and don't ask me where it came from because I don't know. It's just the answer, and they'd go try it and go work. Yeah. Yeah. And that's been my experience with the near death is that I didn't see angels or anything, but I felt a presence like an energy pushing me back back into my body. But I did start to step out.
You know, can I add something?
Yeah, mate. Yeah.
Actually, Mary Rodwell very much caught my attention when I was recovering. She talked about certain experiencers that have had traumatic death accidents, mm-hmm. and how sometimes the star beings and guides will step in. You know as well as I do, they can bend the space-time continuum.
Oh, yeah.
So that changes everything, but how they will step in and remove an experiencer from the accident right at the moment,
yes.
for just a second,
yep.
and then they'll put them back. And I very much think that happened to me, and I'll tell you why. Because one is I went through so many windows, it's a miracle I'm alive, but towards before the time I got released, the doctor was telling me, you know, we've got some questions about you. So what's that? One is the healing you've done has been unreal in a very short time. And number two is you went through several windows, and why don't you didn't lose your teeth or anything like that. And I had very few physical abrasions whatsoever, except for the brain injuries. You can't see those. Yeah. But I think that maybe I was removed and put back in a split second at the time of impact.
Cause quite possible. Very quite
yeah,
possible.
Yeah, I mean, when she said that.
Considering what you went through.
Yeah, yeah. And when Mary was talking about that type of experiencer, it's a chills on my back and mm-hmm. deja vu. And I think they've been involved in my life so much that might have been part of it. I don't know. I think the angels and light beings and star beings, sometimes they all work together for the common goal, like mm-hmm. you were saying earlier.
What I want to touch on quickly, and then we'll go into the throne beings and sort of that information, which ties in with Bill and myself as well, what I've talked about. But some people are going to be wondering, and I did too, and it's pretty cool, but would you mind telling either one of you or both of you, the viewers and listeners, how you know each other? Because there is quite a bit of an age difference, but you do live in the same area. But would you like to go into, if you are able to, just how
that's cool.
Well, that is, because that's true.
Yeah, I'll start. I know his dad, his father, works in the same building I do, and his office is just down the hallway from me. And I guess you started coming in and talking, and as I was becoming aware of this, then he just happened to come into the office to visit his father one day, and we started talking. And one thing led to another. And I guess at first, though, you weren't kind of, you know, I was still frightened by some of this. And as we started talking, then he was guiding me through a little bit of it, like, well, no, I've had similar experiences and other people do. And then that's when I started looking on the internet and found people like Mary and yourself. And started comparing notes, and one thing led to another, and we talked, and I showed you how I see block the sun and everything.
Your technique works. It works.
Yeah, and that's kind of how that started for us. Unrelated. It was kind of like meeting. It was like we were supposed to meet at this place where I work at, and that's what happened. And it just so happens it's through his father.
Yeah, that's how it plays out.
It is, interestingly enough, my father, who obviously thinks both him and I are insane, but he can tell me, you know, I got this guy I work with. He's insane, just like you. He believes in the space people, yada, 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 and he made fun of me a little. So you need to meet him. You need to meet him. But as both of you know, I've been hiding my whole life, all my experiences, and I was like, oh, no way. I'm not doing that. And then when I actually met him, Bill seemed to be able to sense some things about me.
Yeah.
And he kept asking me questions, and I kept trying to act like I was kind of stupid. And most people buy that. He didn't buy it.
No, I didn't buy any of it. No.
And then at first you were still dealing kind of in a religious way in some ways, but you were really waking up, man. You're a totally different person now, you know, as far as like your knowledge and how you bring your engineering expertise to the field is really important.
Well,
you know,
that's how I first started. Is I really didn't care about anything spiritual, the beings. I could care. I only wanted to understand how do you do these things. You know, I'd watch all of the UFO shows on TV. I had a UFO experience at 16. Yeah. I'd seen one before, so I knew how brilliant it could look at night because the first experience was at night, and from that experience, that you never forget that.
Yeah,
and I did have missing time with my friends. I was the only one that remembered even seeing the ship in front of our car. They don't remember anything the next day. So I know that. And they were adults, full adults that I was traveling with. So out of that experience, it just stayed with me. Well, I said, well, I know what I saw. How did they do this? How does something do this? So that's the approach I took. I was much more into the technology and trying to get that down pat because I used to be a pilot, and that always fascinated me. The farther I was away from the Earth, the higher I went, the better I felt.
Yeah. You know, your knowledge of composites, too, helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a really good knowledge of that and what companies on Earth right now are actually making those, you know, and things like that, like Hexcel and places like that. So he's helped me a lot with that, you know.
The general understanding of how this might work and operate. And I had gone and looked on the internet and found all the typical things you hear about, you know, the different theories. I found another resource where a gentleman's drawn up what he calls a light engine. Mm-hmm. And it deals with things like Otis Carr came up with.
And you even showed me too sometime that vacuum propulsion system that you sent me the patent or the US patent of, which I found fascinating.
Yeah.
That is the process. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the person didn't understand the engine and how you get there exactly, but obviously this person was given the information and knowledge to understand the process, which is basically going through a wormhole. Mm-hmm. You create a mini wormhole, and you're going, in which you're basically you're bending gravity.
It was hard for me to accept at first, like Scotty said on Star Trek. It's space that's moving, not the ship.
It's space that's moving.
And actually bringing the gravity to the ship and wrapping it around there while it's already in a wormhole. I mean, that's instantaneous travel.
Yeah, that's very close to what Bob Lazar says and John Lear talks about what Bob was showing him was just it wrapping around the field around the craft and then you're pulling it like it's like you're pulling yourself to... Actually, the other way around to where you've got to go. So we're trying to think in horse and buggy type terms, and you can't with this.
Go ahead.
I was saying just that kind of what Lazar said. I always kind of term his element 140, I think he called it.
115. I think once they hit it, they bombard it with the protons, it bumps up to 116, but 115 is the actual element they use,
But, you know, I kind of combine that because the composites that I've seen, or at least they told me they are, sound a lot like what Phil Schneider called corbomite, quite a bit that can be done in different lattices. Of course, I tripped out on that because that's the name of the second Star Trek episode ever. It was called corbomite. But that's not what Phil meant by it, and I think that he was really on to something. And I don't think his death was an accident, just my opinion.
Hitting on that quickly, have you had anything sort of weird, Men in Black or negative government or anything negative come from what yous are doing?
Oh, I've had my first computers that I kept pictures and things, my journal on, was fried by, the whole motherboard got fried.
I had that happen to three computers just to add that in,
All of that stopped after I had my encounter where I actually saw the orb being destructed. Mm-hmm. After that, all the negative, whatever was doing this, it all stopped instantly. I've had my car act up where it looked like from what I understand from the mechanics, the main wire harness from the alternator to the battery or to the main electrical connections on my car were blown through halfway. The windshield wipers went on and off all by themselves. The horn would go on and off. The lights started flashing. At that point, yeah, that was a little mysterious.
You saw like what's the third?
Yeah, yeah, it was like the encounters of the third. It was almost like that. I did say a prayer at that time. Yeah, I because my faith, this is kind of tied to my spiritual understanding, and instantly it stopped.
Yeah. And we'll get to into a little bit of that in a bit too.
Barry and I have had telephone conversations, and we've had. I think it was the Grays.
Yeah, it might have been.
Or something negative. It was negative, whatever it was trying to disrupt our conversation.
Sounded like dolphins.
Yeah, like a dolphin sound. And it just took over our cell phones.
Now, can I add something? To be honest, unlike Bill, I'd had no experiences like that till last time we Skyped. Beat it.
Oh, I took you Skype, hey?
Yes, the last time we Skyped, that's when that happened to me, the gentleman messing with our phones, I could see down the street there. It's very odd. Nothing like that had ever happened to me before.
Yeah, so. You spoke to me. I remember you saying something about that, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, it makes one wonder when you lose that kind of time in these experiences and the fact that the star beings can bend the space-time continuum. It's not the same for them. How much has the government been involved? How much are they tracking people like us anyway? It does bring that to my mind. If I had a government exchange and I'm unaware of it, you know what I mean?
Well, it's even with the super soldier type stuff I was talking to you about, which involves me. It's like, do I really want to open that can of worms? Because it's, where does it stop? And a lot of the time it's sort of like a double agent type thing. You're doing it for upstairs and you infiltrate here and then you're sort of reporting back and then... Yeah, and I've talked to a few people where that's been the case. So, how deep can you go? And I even think once you're inside the government, it's like there's different black op factions that think they're the main black ops, but there's other ones that are behind them that they're totally unaware of, just like any program, you know, whether it's got to do with weaponry or defense, you know, especially those areas. They've always got smoking mirrors, so to speak, because just to cover everyone's backside with the money and where the money's going in the actual devices. So, but what we'll do now, we'll go into the throne beings, which, and the reason why I'm saying this is I'd like you, Barry, to go into your experience because it sort of ties in with what Bill's experienced and I've experienced, and I'll get you to go on about what they said, you know, communicated, and then what you've experienced that day, Bill, at the supermarket afterwards, we'll go into it. So if you don't mind, we'll get into it.
Okay, no problem. Well, I had to have a regression for this one. It was I was by myself. I would call them. My guides came to me, and they were communicating with me, but I lost several hours once again. So I got a regression. In the regression, I'm being bilocated astrally, and I'm in front of these throne beings. And when I say that word, I would advise somebody look at The Keys of Enoch by J.J. Hertog and check out what he calls throne energies and throne beings. And it describes a certain celestial being there. But these beings, there were three of them. They appeared to be on these columns of light. That's why I kind of assumed they're thrones. It made sense. And they themselves resembles Christine Dennett's picture of the being holding the Sacred Heart, and its head is exploding into the ship and beyond that into the cosmos. They didn't look like Grays or any type of star being I've specifically seen. But the back of their heads seemed to be light filaments and not stable, okay? They showed me the Earth and inside of the Earth a pyramid that was on its apex, like astrally, and they said that the Earth had been astrally depleted and that our physical destruction was only a part of it and that we all have to join together and create a loving field that re-energizes this pyramid. And they said that the cup it would overfloweth is what they called it. And they showed me this pyramid, the energy going over the pyramid, coming out into our soil, into our atmosphere. And it looked a lot like the way I've seen the magnetic fields of the Earth described in the U shape. It looked like that quite a bit. And they said that could save Earth. And they said something about Earth being almost destroyed before. And they said that's not going to happen again. That's why I can say that. But inside, in the middle, it looked like these three beings were holding like a very large quasi-crystal with odd symmetry on it. But I think a lot of religious people might call it a Sacred Heart. And that's about all I could say. At the end of it, before they relinquished me, one of the beings steps back, and suddenly it's in what looks like a chamber of some type, a glass chamber, and its head is going even more crazy, and the light is just exploding. And they say to me, the warp fields of your thoughts interpenetrate the third dimension. You don't know what you are. You all don't know how strong you are, really. I mean, I never thought of our thought forms as being warp fields in that way, but it makes sense to a certain degree. So that's all I can really say about that. It was unique, to say the least. It blew my socks off. You know, I thought during the regression I just sat there and wasted my money, but I couldn't even remember.
Well, that's like me with my regression. I can remember snippets of the second part of it, but once they jumped in, it wasn't even me talking anymore, and it was very hard to watch. So, it's sort of blank out, snippets here and there. But it's just, I'll get you to go into Bill now, how this sort of ties in. And what I found fascinating talking, both of you talking before, were you saying that Barry just talked about the magnetic field, and you saw something similar?
Okay. I was shown earthquake. I was in a ship looking back at the Earth. This is my second astral vision, and I could see the Earth in turmoil physically, like plate tectonics. I could hear rumbling, like what you would think of an earthquake, and things, and people yelling and screaming. I could hear the audible sounds of men, women, and children screaming, and this being standing by me to my right with its hand outreached, pointing to the monitor, and it looks like a portal that I'm looking through back at the Earth. And all the Earth, everything just starts pulsating, and then I start seeing this white, it looked like mist or bands form, and then it just started moving like at a high vibration, and then I started seeing white speckle flashes, all these flashes, and then one of them came out of the, about where the equator is, towards the ship, towards me, and then that's when I recognized from my videos, it looked exactly like the essence of what I see in my videos. And in my videos, some days there's a lot of activity, they're just like, it's so fast, the images are just speckling, coming in and out, they look like sparkles. And other days they're just, I call it lazy, and there's not much activity. Now, I'm going to just say this. Every time I see this that way, there's either great volcanic activity, earthquake activity, or great unrest, emotional unrest on this planet, negative energy. People are, you know, killing, murder, everything, the wars, everything you see in chaos, what seems like chaos, human chaos, I can tell by looking, and it emulates it. If it's a calm day, there's not much going, you know, if I see them just kind of lazy, moving around, or not as many, there's not any much going on to report in the news. I mean, people are fairly tranquil, but I've noticed this over about the last year. There's tides with this. It comes and goes, and sure enough, it happened just the other day. There was an earthquake in California, and again in Peru, and I was out the day before taking video, and you couldn't hardly see them. I could send you bits of that. And it just masks that goes with this. And that's what I saw from the ship. They were trying to show me this. I don't know if it was supposed to be a point of reference so I would understand, but it did. It took on the shape of like the Van Allen, the magnetic bands around the Earth. It had the same shape, except it had form that I could see. And it looked like these little, I call them ships or orbs. They're white in color. Yep. And they sparkle. They go so fast. It's like they just sparkled.
Now, would you mind going into the experience at the supermarket too? Because we've had you on the show talk about that, but I do find that because it's similar to some of the stuff that I've spoken about. Different, but they do tie in like we've spoken about.
Right. I have photographs that I've taken that people, you can see the ships, but people have described as the veil. I call it the distortion, and I've shared a couple of those with you over time. Yeah. And you can see ships that are halfway in and halfway out, and others are just like, it's like looking at through a piece of frosted glass. That's what it looks like, a piece of frosted glass. And I had the experience. I'm getting out of the automobile car, and I'm standing. I think you call it the boot.
The trunk.
And I'm waiting, and I'm standing there, and I'm wearing my sunglasses, and I had a vision. This is all in a vision. And I see, it looks like it may be on a weekend. There isn't as many people there, and it's in midday. It may be between 11 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or 11 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. It's a beautiful, clear day. And I'm seeing a woman with three small children bringing a shopping cart out of the store, and there's a woman getting out of her car across the aisle from where I've been parked, and she's walking towards the entrance of the store, and then all of a sudden there's a bright white flash of light over my right shoulder, which would be towards the sun, and I look over my shoulder and I could see a white ship like I've seen in many of my photographs, and that gave me a sense of comfort. I'm like, okay, I've seen this before, no big deal. Then all of a sudden, there's this distortion from the north, just comes moving probably about 10 miles an hour, 10 miles per hour. That gives you a frame of reference of how fast it was moving across the supermarket parking lot. And as it would as people were passing through it, two were taken and one person would be left. And this was the ratio. I mean, it was like picking people up and they would just be lifted up and gone. And I'm watching this and quite amazed. I'm like, okay, it's getting closer to me. Then the woman that was just in the aisle in front of us, she took off. Then it hit me. It felt like a pressure, like about somebody just kind of touching you like that real quick. And then all of a sudden you're like half the weight that you are, and I'm lifted off the ground. And all of us are coming up. And then there's a woman I remember seeing at about 500 feet above the parking lot. She's just running around the parking lot yelling and screaming. But now, by now, she is in the veil. I can't see beyond her, the distortion. And then the imagery quits. And I wake up instantly, and that was the last vision I've ever had. I haven't had any more. I've not had any more interaction other than what I get with my photographs. I've actually taken pictures of ships with, I call it light beings or ships, that have columns of white light that will project, then they'll turn into the Merkaba, which is a star tetrahedron shape.
Yeah, and I've seen those. And also the photo you took of the 2-to-1 ratio in the sky, that's how that's done, projection or however it's done, I don't know. We don't know, but that's pretty fascinating, is it? It's plain as day when you look at it.
Yeah, it's the one that I sent you that had that looked like a number 1 and a number 2 written into it. And it has a lot of little sparkly orbs, and then there's bigger ships. They look like ships. Some are sticking through, and then others are just not focused. You can't get them to focus.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating stuff. Well, what we'll do, we'll wrap it up there at the moment. In the future, soon, I'll have you both back on the show, and I'll get you to Barry to come on and talk a bit more about your personal stuff, because I haven't had you on by yourself. But
thanks, Peter. Yeah, you and Bill got me to come out of the closet. I appreciate
I know what it's like, mate, because I've been through it, and you know, thumbs up and pat on the back to you, because it is, you know, it's.
Well, thanks, man. The first time you asked me to do it, I was like, oh, I can't do that. I told her, I can't do that. I'm too scared, but I can do it now.
No, I think you'll be well received, and like I said, everyone that I know that's talked to you just absolutely loves talking to you, and just you're down to earth, and both of you are down to earth, and I've got so much respect for both of you, and I just appreciate knowing you and having you in my life.
Hey, thank you.
Yep,
I love talking to everybody too. It's really it's kind of cool.
Yep. Well, I like sharing. We communicate through emails, so I enjoy that.
Definitely, definitely. Well, we'll wrap it up there, and
keep up the good tweets too.
Yeah. No, cheers, mate. Cheers. And I'll have links to both of yous. Also to your book, Bill, as well. I'll have links to that. So we'll wrap it up there. And again, thanks, guys. And we'll chat soon. And thanks everyone, for watching.
Thanks, man. God bless.
Bye-bye.